Hey, Phil, let go of my ego. Put aside the ego and embrace the moment.
Oh, for crying out loud. It's time for another midweek drive transcontinental adventure.
I was talking about waffles.
This year's been a cold, cold year. Let's take that chill away. We've missed out on so much fun, but now we're ready for Christmas Day. Christmas Day. This Christmas.
Christmas bubble. And indeed, if we look back at the archives of the Midweek Drive, we go back to the 19th of March, this very year, 2020, and we find that it was none other than Jessica Burtis who coined the time, coined the term even, personal bubble time, when indeed challenged by William Coles to actually come up with something which was more friendly than self-isolation. Hermiting was his suggestion. Catherine Dove actually came up with self-accompanying, but the clear winner was obviously Jessica Burtis, leading actually from the front there with personal bubble time. Jessica, congratulations on setting the scene for that particular
Thank you, purpose. Thank you.
Good from that point of view. And Katie Grimmison, obviously sharing her own bubble from Birmingham, also joining us today. Why are we so obsessed with bubbles? By the way, hi, Katie. Are you well?
Yeah, I haven't wrote to Chris Whitty lately.
No, well, that's because we haven't got Chris Whitty online now. He's too busy with his graphs and probably actually coming to grips listening to what we've just heard on Siren Radio, the absolutely amazing Christmas bubble and so on. And who's responsible for that? Well, it's Chris Clark. Chris, how are you? Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm very well.
Well, you know, it's a Christmas bubble. It's Christmas time. It's a Christmas bubble. Oh, date. It's just share with the team what was it all about? What kind of came to this whole thing, and why, when we received a wonderful request from Catherine, did we feel we had to contact you and say, look, let's do a feature on this?
Oh, well, I'm glad you asked. It's a long story, but I'll try and condense it. The original idea was that because children in school are being pretty restricted this year with Christmas plays, any kind of singing. I think lots of schools have completely banned singing, which is really sad for the kids in school this Christmas, because I think we all remember being that age and it being really exciting at that time of year doing these creative activities.
Don't sing, it'll kill you.
Yeah, I know. Well, we wanted to make it safe for children to do that, basically. Find a way that they could express themselves, have a really exciting creative project, but also do it in a COVID safe way. So we came up with this project called Stay Safe Studios, and we were going to do it in schools, but then the schools tightened up and we couldn't even do it in schools. So I found a lovely little studio in Sleaford called Street Star Live Studios. And they agreed to help me out with all the temperature checks and like cleansing all the equipment between use, and most of all, of course, the facilities to be able to record the children in very, very small, safe bubbles for this track. But the story doesn't end there, because, of course, lockdown number two, the sequel, was announced, and our month's worth of studio sessions were completely out the window.
You see, had Katie Grimason known about this, she would have added it in her letter to Chris Whitty and said, look, not only have you ruined my life, you've ruined the lives of the children in Lincolnshire as well. What's going on?
I know these poor kids, 25-plus kids waiting to... amazing Christmas song. So luckily we had one studio session booked before November the 5th, which was of course D-Day in terms of lockdown, and we rushed all these kids in, you know, I think it was three or four kids at a time to keep it all safe. None of the poor kids knew the song at all. I got them singing it that night within an hour, quickly recorded them line at a time and pieced this thing together from literally 1,000 recordings of all these children singing different bits and clapping and doing all these little hand claps and foot stomps and bits and pieces for the song. So it's been a bit of a jigsaw puzzle, an audio jigsaw puzzle, but I think you'll agree it's come together really nicely. Hey,
well, I mean, as I say, I think it's great. It's Christmas time. It's beaten Slade and Happy Christmas, everybody. Merry Christmas. Well into a cocked hat for me, but let's turn to the team. Katie, what did you make of Christmas Bubble?
Yeah, I thought it was lovely, really cute, and it's just nice to hear something like Christmassy and not all about COVID.
Yeah, I mean, you don't really want a sort of COVID bubble. It's COVID bubble. I mean, obviously COVID is kind of like sphere-shaped, so maybe that's a sequel. I don't know. Anyway, Lockdown 3, perhaps. Jessica, in the States, is Christmas Bubble likely to actually float the boats of the North Carolina citizens?
Yeah, I thought it was so precious. It's amazing. I want to send it to my mom so that she can listen. I think it's so sweet. It definitely put me in a Christmas mood, which I tend to think is blasphemy before Thanksgiving, but this is tempting me to like get in the Christmas cheer kind of mood. So.
Oh, that's music to my ears.
Yeah. This was, of course, one of the critical aspects, Chris, that Jessica has been asking the last couple of weeks. When is it appropriate to actually start off with Christmas decorations? Because we've been sort of nudged here to sort of put Christmas decorations up. It can be quite critical. Okay, we're agreed. It's actually awesome. Jessica, any questions you want to put to Chris at this stage?
Yeah, what's your favorite Christmas song, like, out of the classics? This was a question that I think we have been thinking about before.
That is a really difficult question, actually, because it's so difficult. I do love the David Bowie and Bing Crosby, Little Drummer Boy, Peace on Earth. I think that's really sweet.
Pa-rum-pa-pum-pum.
Indeed.
But
I think the first Christmas song that I remember was Band-Aid, though, because I was about 3 years old in 1984, so that record's quite special to me.
I mean, interesting enough, one of our other regular contributors, Robin Pierce, finds it quite bland, Band-Aid. He's actually said, we know there won't be snow in Africa this Christmas. You know, it's fairly self-evident. You know, unless you're on Kilimanjaro, in which case you'll be on a different part of the planet entirely, you know, that sort of thing. But nonetheless, yeah, the sentiment was actually there, but they didn't obviously have the children of Slinkenshire and Sleaford actually singing on Christmas Bubble Time. Katie, what about yourself? What quiz questions have you got, Katie?
I guess really, like, we know Christmas is going to be different this year, but what do you normally do for Christmas? Like, how do you spend it? Is it just with the family?
Well, I've got 5 kids, so Christmas is quite chaotic for me.
That's quite an expanded bubble.
Yes, yeah. We're lucky in that sense, really, that there's going to be at least 7 of us at Christmas, no matter what happens. So it'll be a jolly Christmas, and the kids get so excited. So we have an excuse to act like children as well.
And how are they taking this Christmas thing? And also, did they sing on the actual track as well? Or did you say, no, I'm sorry, children, you might be my children, but you're not on this one?
Well, I gave them all the opportunity. I said, would you like to sing on the song? And 2 of them took me up on it. Sam and Eva, who are 4 and 6, they are on the song. My eldest 2 girls, they were a little bit too shy, but they're going to be in the video. They said they'll do the video, but they didn't want to sing. And Charlie's only a baby, so he was too young.
Excellent. Jessica, over to you again.
So is this the first time that you've ever, like, worked with a bunch of kids on, like, a Christmas song? Or is this, like, something that you try to do every year so that, like, each new year of kids can have, like, a little festive thing to do?
I have done it before, actually. We did a lovely Christmas song in, I think it was 2017, Christmas 2017. I worked in one of our local schools, the William Alvey School, and we produced a song called William Alvey Christmas, which is still out there. You can find that if you want to listen to that one as well. We did a really lovely project with those children, where I asked them all to come up with scenes for the music video, and we shot against blue screen and green screens and things like that. And it was just really exciting film, you know, making a film for the kids was a really big deal. And they had free rein on the story that we were telling. So there's lots of mad things in the video, like guinea pigs pulling sleighs and weird things like that, you know, imaginations of kids running wild. And that did really well. We got into the top 10 on the Amazon charts for that one.
Oh, so wow.
We
did.
Yeah.
Which of course brings us to the next little question, Chris. How can people actually get hold of their own personalized copy and support musicians of Christmas Bubble Time?
Ah, okay, well, that's it. Is the important question. The single is released on the 4th of December. So most good download stores, you'll be able to purchase it from all the usual ones. And we are going to be running a TikTok competition in December to find the most creative TikTok to go with the song. So it'll be available on there as well.
And is there an age limit in terms of the TikTok thing? Because I know Katie's very keen to actually get her TikTok videos out and released to the world, I'm sure.
I don't think so, no. I think the beauty of something like TikTok is everyone can have a go, and that's the sentiment of the competition, really.
And the video, will that be around on YouTube and the usual channels as well? And how's it going? Or is it a socially distanced, bubble-safe video?
Well, everything has been a bit of a logistical nightmare with this project, but in some ways that makes the whole creative process quite fun, thinking outside the box, or the bubble in this case. And so the video is going quite well, actually. We've got children sending me little snippets and Zoom calls and things like that, but I've roped in my own kids to shoot the rest of the video as well, so we can tell some sort of Christmassy tale, and it's looking rather festive.
I'm just going to be outstanding. Well, I can reveal that. I mean, we've heard it once, but before this hour of the Midweek Drive is actually wrapped, or indeed Midweek Drive Morning Edition, we'll certainly feature it again. We've got relationship expert Joe Barnett coming up, and also financial expert Neil Moles to chat about various other bits and pieces. But before we actually say farewell, Chris, how can people actually keep in touch with your good self in terms of your own musical careers and so on? I mean, are you around on the Instagrams, the Facebooks and so on? Time to have some shameless additional publicity.
Nothing wrong with additional publicity. I've currently got a YouTube channel, which is Dead Boy. That's my solo act, DDBOY. I'm not very good at spelling, but they can
and
also.
Besides, you're still alive, so that's always important. Well, otherwise, he's speaking to a zombie.
But they can follow more of the progress of this particular song on Facebook if they want to join our group. We're called Sleaford's Official Christmas Song 2020. So the more the merrier on that, to come and follow the updates.
Well, I think, I mean, Katie, I can tell, and Jessica, doubtless will go to that on Facebook. And Julie, like Sleaford's Official Song 2020?
Sleaford's Official Christmas Song 2020.
Sleaford's Official Christmas Song 2020. Jessica, I know when you were in Lincoln, because you had your time cut short after coming out with Personalised Bubble Time, or now Personalised Christmas Bubble Time, the whole thing said you had to go back to the States and so on. But Sleaford is a little bit north, I think, of Lincoln in the world. Okay. And it's, I mean, how would you describe it, Chris? I mean, to the uninitiated, what is Sleaford?
It's a sweet, small town with a lot of good intention. I think there's some improvement could be made, but it's a really lovely place and with lots of potential.
Yeah. Bit like England these days. But anyway, that's under Boris Johnson, you know. Sweet, small place. Yeah, a little bit unloved, but what the hey. I wonder if our Prime Minister is still actually enjoying his personalised bubble time. He certainly needs to listen to the Christmas bubble song, if indeed he is. Yes. Released, of course, on all the major platforms on December the 4th. Katie, will you be going and getting your copy of Christmas Bubble Time?
Yeah, and I can't wait to see the video as well. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I can't wait.
It's all about the video these days. And let's hope it's more creative than the Band-Aid guys when they're just in a studio both singing, you know, trying to out-sing each other. You got your boy George, you got your Paul Young. Oh, hang on, we've actually got Paul Young's guitarist on the show next week. So I might as well not knock that. So we'll move on to a different line entirely. Jessica, it has been awesome as ever. Jessica, let's put those last two questions to Chris and we can take one from each of you. So Jessica, would you like to start the one, the question one for Chris Clark?
Sure. So, Chris, have you had a reasonably interesting festive Zoomer with us today?
I've loved this. I didn't know what to expect. I've loved it. And I love answering questions and I love talking, as you might be able to imagine. So this has been great for me.
And Katie, the second one, of course, is?
Can we look forward to connecting with you again?
I would be very happy to do so, yes.
There you are. Chris Clark will return. Obviously, when the Christmas bubble is number one across the base, we'll do our best. You know, who knows? Lots of Christmas songs. It is actually the first Christmas track we've covered this year on Siren. So again, you're ahead of the curve from that side of things. And our next musical feature is dealing with almost a kind of dystopian view of the pandemic and various other bits and pieces. But we'll find out about that sort of in shows to come. For the moment, though, by the way, Jessica and Katie, has it been good for you today?
Yes.
Yeah.
Excellent. We'll see you both again very soon. Jessica Burtis, Katie Grimason and Chris Clark. I feel as though we should really go out with a little chorus of Christmas Bubble, but doing it over Zoom, we always never quite get the connections right. But you know, maybe, yeah. I mean, Chris, do you want to just start off, lead us into this whole thing, and maybe we can hum into it afterwards, and we can segue into another version of the music as well. Off you go, Chris.
You really put me on the spot here, haven't you? When people.
What do you think this is? BBC Lincolnshire. You know, we like to actually sort of milk the juice out of every one of our contributors. Go for it.
Do you know what? I've listened to it that many times, you'd think I'd know it better. I'm thinking, oh no, what are the lyrics? What are the lyrics? Because I don't sing on it, do I? But it goes a little bit like this. This Christmas time, we're in a Christmas bubble. And that's all you're getting.
Yay.
This year's been a cold, cold year. Let's take that chill away. We've missed out on so much fun. Christmas Day, Christmas Day.
Time for another Zoomer on the Midweek Drive for Siren Radio and southsidebroadcasting.podbeam.com. Keeping the COVID-19 bugs at bay.
£434 million. £434 million. Is that to do with respect to our indebtedness and a whole variety of other things? Well, it's certainly to do with debt. It's all to do with housemates. And unlike the wonderful world of Friends and that time where people can live together and happily get on, it would seem that nightmare housemates are indeed costing Brit folk who actually share flats with them £434 million each year. That's £552 per person. Now, to actually talk through some of the findings in this recent survey, we're delighted to welcome a genuine money expert extraordinaire and indeed an independent relationship expert and coach. More importantly, it's the fabulous Jo Barnett. How are you, Jo?
Good afternoon. Very well, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, good. I mean, I don't actually have any flatmates at present. In a sense, I'm pleased I don't really. So, I mean, it's good news from that point of view. But this is quite shocking, really, in terms of flatmates who basically just don't pay their way.
Yeah, it's a lot of money, you know, and it's a lot of people's hard-earned money that they really these days can't afford to just give away. So I think it's really worth changing things around and finding a way forward that you're not losing money by sharing a flat with somebody. And, you know, that's why Barclays Money Mentors have come up with this brilliant guidance where you can get this guidance for free and just help with all of the budgeting, even if you're planning for your financial future, so that you have an alternative to just kind of winging it.
I mean, more than half of those surveyed lived in shared accommodation, and they say they become financially worse off as a result of an unreliable flatmate. I'm thinking, Joe, in terms of the reasons for this, I mean, is it because when somebody's actually living with you, you feel almost as though emotionally, even though there's no kind of blood relationship there, there's a kind of connection that you don't want to kind of be seen as the person who's saying, oi, you need to actually pay your way, etc. And maybe we actually put off things. Is it just a case of we kind of defer to our natural kind of kind settings here?
Well, that's right. You know, no one wants to have to talk about money. People find it quite awkward, but actually it's the reverse. The more you talk about it, the more simple things will be. So, you know, I've suggested a few tips, like when you move in together, actually have a kitty, so that you might take your cleaning products from there, or your basics, your milk and your tea bags, things like that, and that the kitty is then replaced. So talk about these things, communicate. Don't leave things to chance, and don't wait until there's a big upset. You know, have these things laid out in writing, in house rules, as soon as you guys move in together.
I was going to say, would you suggest actually getting a kind of contract drawn up together, which effectively all parties sign, and they actually say, look, this needs to be the case. Then, of course, I suppose you've got the issue about people breaking the contract and going through that line, but at least it might help.
Well, that's right. And at least you can hold people accountable. So the other thing I've suggested is having a WhatsApp group. So, you know, if someone's used all the milk in the fridge, you could send a little polite note saying, hey, guys, you know, someone's finished off the milk. Could you just please replace it so I can have my tea in the morning? You know, it doesn't need to be a horrible tone. It can be a friendly tone. But things like the WhatsApp, communal WhatsApp group, and the list of house rules that are on the fridge and you've all agreed to it before you move in together will just keep that communication open.
Siren Radio, obviously based at the University of Lincoln, and clearly our students, like all universities, they're kind of involved with a whole variety of things. And I must admit, as a tutor, I have heard my fair share from indeed students about the challenges they've had about cohabitants not cleaning up after themselves, basically taking food without replacing it, inviting friends over without asking. I mean, this does seem to be quite a systemic problem that we've actually got. I mean, is it a generational thing? I mean, the more mature people get as flatmates, you know, as you head into your 20s and 30s, I mean, maybe you've stopped sort of being a flatmate in that sort of stage. Is that less of a problem, or is it a case of
no? I think these days, you know, you can find flatmates in 30s, 40s, because there's people that can't afford to get on the property ladder yet. So yes, of course, as you get older, you get more mature, but you also get more set in your ways. So, you know, ironing things out and being able to talk about money and how you're going to divide up bills and a kitty and when money's due, it's never too early to have that conversation.
And presumably you want to actually avoid pressing the metaphorical red button and actually going nuclear over your flatmate actually not paying their bills on time. I mean, these are strategies that in a sense you need to put into place to ensure they're preventative rather than actually having to deal with the cure.
Well, that's right. You know, it may seem like more time effective, but it'd be really great if you've got this WhatsApp group and someone could send a polite reminder the week coming up to when the money's due, or, you know, rent's due, bills need to be paid. Hey, guys, can you please put into the account, you know, bills are being taken out in a few days' time. Thanks so much. So everyone's had a reminder. And if there's any problems, ask what's going on. And, you know, you could even refer your flatmate to the Barclays Money Mentors scheme, and if they need some extra help or mentoring, it's there.
And it's all important to actually note that obviously we provide impartial financial advice, because clearly there might be a sort of thought that, I don't bank with Barclays, I have my accounts elsewhere. You can't really use that as an excuse, because you can get this impartial advice as well, presumably.
That's right. It's a free guidance and it's available to anyone. You don't have to bank with Barclays. So it's fantastic news for, you know, anyone who wants to get in contact with them. It's absolutely available. No excuse.
Have you ever had any experience of this, Jo? I mean, I suspect with your negotiating skills, you probably actually just sort it out immediately. But has there been any time when you've actually had a flatmate who you just thought, oh, no, this is just not going well?
I do remember at university having flatmates, and, you know, there were issues over cleanliness. You know, no one was cleaning the kitchen or the bathroom, and it was just revolting. And even I felt, well, I don't want to do it the whole time. It's so revolting. So, you know, that's why I suggested having a rota, you know, drawn up. And even if you can afford it, get a cleaner once a month to come in. Food, you know, other people using your food, and just having the fridge not clean enough that you would even want to leave your food there. So you've just got to iron these things out at the beginning and say, like, come on guys, this is how we want to live, let's not let it go, let's work together as a team. And if someone's struggling, then recognize they're struggling, and instead of sort of being quite cool and critical, maybe asking what's going on, you know, you're having some issues, is there anything that you want to talk to us about? And having that human side to you.
And a reminder, Jo, where can people actually check out this Barclay Money Mentors? What's the best website to go to for further information?
So the best place to go to is barclays.co.uk/moneymentors. And you'll be able to get guidance on how to achieve your financial goals.
Jo Barnett, relationship expert and coach. Huge thanks indeed. Keep on keeping on. And I'm sure we'll speak again soon. Bye for now, Jo.
Thank you.
Money and retirement. Retirement and money. Two things that tend to go hand in hand in terms of fears and concerns re the future. And a recent study by Progyny has found that people as young as 45 years old are worried about their retirement funds and are seriously concerned that they will not have enough money to retire. Now, to talk us through some of the fears that have been manifesting in the over 45-year-olds and probably younger as well, actually, we're delighted to welcome the Chief Executive Officer of Progyny, Neil Moles, to join us today. Neil, how are you?
I'm really well, thank you, Alex. Thank you for the nice introduction.
That's okay. Now, talk to us about these findings, because certainly one in five British folk are wishing that they'd started their pension planning sooner, and a third of folk across the UK want to know more about pensions.
Yeah, so the purpose behind the study was really to try and see where people's thinking is. I guess we're mid-pandemic at the moment. Let's hope we're nearer the end of the tunnel than the start of it, and the flame is burning now. But what we saw throughout the study was that people recognise that they need knowledge, but yet they're still not seeking advice, which is strange. You know, about a third of people want to know more about pensions, but yet they don't go and find out more about pensions. You know, we talk about fears and regrets. You know, people do have fears that they're not saving enough. They have regrets. You know, a quarter of people's biggest regret is not saving enough, but yet they're not making that connection between going and getting advice to deal with these issues.
Well, quite simply, it's a case of if you want to take something out, you need to put something in, presumably. It's almost as basic as that.
Yeah, without a doubt. But, you know, I think as you know, we have to look at ourselves as an industry as well, Alex, and we have to, as an industry, we need to be more focused on providing information to people. We need to be more focused on giving advice to those people who don't think that they need it, because people who need advice haven't started saving yet because they need the education to start saving.
Now, one of the challenges I think that I've suddenly had shared with me that people have is sometimes because everything's supposed to be magically online, you get all your details online, it's all there, you can access everything. And yet there are a number of folk, and they're not necessarily digitally challenged, but they do have the situation whereby, you know, there are lots of sort of steps to go through. And they think, oh, I've lost the password only lasts for so long and so on. There's a bit of a faff on from that. I mean, are we somehow creating a bit of a gap here in terms of people who still prefer actually doing as we're doing now, albeit through the medium of Zoom, actually having a face-to-face discussion as opposed to, sorting things out online?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, one of the things that we've learned through the pandemic is that our effective ways of communication have changed. You know, if you look at the population of the UK, you know, just over 60 million people, there's only 26,000, you know, people registered to give advice. So historically, if we want to work on a face-to-face basis, the numbers just don't stack up that we can actually see everybody. But what we found over the last 6 months is that this way of communicating is working really well. Therefore, perhaps we're now able to see more people and deliver advice and more information to people throughout that. And maybe, you know, we might be able to encourage more people to come into the financial advice industry to help us with that challenge.
Sure. 27% of British folk, as I say, planning on transferring their current wealth to their immediate children. That's if you're in the over 45 bracket. 42% believe that they're continuing to save into their final years. There's no one size fits all here, presumably, Neil. There's a sort of case of where, you know, everybody has their own individual circumstances and challenges that they're faced with. But generally, would you say that ultimately you need to be saving as soon as rather than later to ensure that things are balanced out?
Again, yes. I mean, you know, most people in life are defined by experience and their own past. So they'll tend to do what their parents and grandparents did. What we're finding now is that, and very nicely, people are living longer. So those inheritances are not coming down as fast as they used to. So, and a lot more of that cash that maybe would have been passed on is now used for care fees and various other things. So, you know, there's more responsibility on younger people now to more than ever to save. You know, there's less and less support from the state when you do get older in real terms. And therefore, yeah, taking stock of things at a very young age and starting to make those commitments is so important.
So bridging that advice gap, the best way forward presumably would be how, Neil? Start the conversation, start beginning to actually get in touch with progeny, etc. How would you recommend people to proceed?
Well, yeah, you've got to push the pebble down the hill, haven't you, to get it moving, ultimately. Look, but in practical terms, what does that mean? In practical terms, it means that we need to be, as an industry, we need to be providing more free information to people, you know, not just allowing them to Google things and come up with answers. You know, in the study shows that 11% of people think Google's their financial advisor. Well, you wouldn't think 11% of people wouldn't think Google's their doctor, because you wouldn't want open heart surgery. Perhaps not. So it's, you know, I think the challenge is starting it moving. Yeah, I think personally, one of the biggest gifts we can give our children is education. Once you've got education, you can't take it away from anyone. So why don't we throw financial education into that as well? And why don't we really make that, you know, part of the syllabus for the family life? And ultimately, maybe we can pass that into schools as well.
Well, we've been talking about that for a good few years, actually, ensuring that the curriculum does incorporate financial awareness within folk, because it does certainly help. As you say, understanding can be the key to all sorts of other issues. Neil, where would you suggest people should actually go using their search engine, which we've already mentioned, so we won't plug it again, or any search engines that's available? Where would you suggest that they should actually go to seek out Progeny, or indeed further details about this survey?
So the full details and the results of the survey are available on our website, theprogenygroup.com.
Excellent. Neil Mulls, Chief Executive Officer at Progeny. Huge thanks. Keep on keeping on and see you very soon.
Lending quality chat and insightful comment for the 21st century, you're listening to the Midweek Drive.
Well, it's here. Winter, that is. Despite the fact people say, oh, it doesn't start until December, I think it's fair to say that when the temperature drops to between 5 and 15 degrees centigrade, it averages out at 10, then maybe actually it is time to start saying we are in winter mode. And some of us are actually bracing ourselves for another winter of discontent. I mean, we've got pandemics, we've got Brexit, we've got all sorts of things happening there. How can we actually deal with this? Well, maybe, just maybe, with the help of a new Fisherman's Friend survey. And indeed, we have from Fisherman's Friend, the awesome Robert Metcalf with us today. How are you, Robert?
Very well indeed. Hello.
Excellent. Good to see that positivity working through that, because some of the findings from this Fisherman's Friend barometer of the nation tends to suggest that actually many of us dislike this time of year. We've got the dark mornings and evenings, we've got black ice, we've got heating bills, we've got defrosting the car. And that's before we even start talking about pandemics, etc. Are we all doomed?
Well, I don't think so. One of the strange things is that this seems to take us by surprise every year, even though it comes around with kind of fairly predictable regularity. But yes, 47% of the nation cite dark mornings and evenings as their top gripe about winter. And as you say, other things like black ice and the cost of heating and so on come quite close behind that. But yeah, it doesn't sound as though we're looking forward to this winter too much, I'm afraid to say.
Well, no, and with the added sort of bonuses that we have of COVID-19, and as I said, the Brexit scenario, then clearly there are challenges from that point of view. However, you know, one of the sort of things that needs to be noted as well is that maybe it's an age thing. Maybe we need to get in touch with our inner child, perhaps, you know.
I think there's a lot to be said for that, absolutely. Looking at the survey, as we get older, we seem to enjoy Christmas, or perhaps the trappings around Christmas, a little bit less. So we get a bit grumpier about music. We get a little bit festive when less festive when it comes to putting up the lights. But younger people, those in the younger age groups, really do love those Christmas things. So 75% of young adults really do like to see Christmas lights twinkling away. So it does seem to depend a bit on age.
And presumably that was one of the reasons why it was suggested that we should put up our Christmas decorations earlier this year, because of obviously the challenges we're faced with. Have you noticed a sort of change? I mean, this is an annual winter survey that Fisherman's Friend actually puts together from that point of view, more than 2,000 adults. Has this year been special from that point of view, or is it a case of, oh, same old, same old?
No, it does seem to be getting a little bit gloomier this year. And I guess that is predictable up to a point. And I think a good degree of that is just because of the uncertainty around what's going to happen during the winter period, as you've already said, on all sorts of different fronts. So I think if people are a little bit clearer about what lies ahead, then some of these concerns might slip away a little bit.
Of course, historically, the last people who effectively cancelled Christmas were Oliver Cromwell's Parliament, and that led to another civil war and so on. So I suspect that the current incumbents of the government might be a little bit concerned about that. But I'm still surprised to find that nearly half of over 35s cannot stand Christmas traditions. Goodness me.
Yeah. Yes, it is. It is a bit of a surprise, isn't it? I don't think they're fibbing. I think they genuinely believe that. But again, it may be something to do with the year that we've been having, and perhaps no one really wants to launch into the celebrations with full vigour yet until everything's a little bit clearer.
Yeah. Plus, of course, again, you need to be in touch with the inner child all the time. And as we said, maintain that sort of spirit of Christmas really throughout the year. I've tried to avoid, obviously, the classic cliche about sucking on a fisherman's friend, because it would lead me into all sorts of dangerous territories. But at the same time, presumably, in terms of actually keeping our pep and vigour up, that would be a nice sort of additional stocking filler to consider, I would have thought.
Well, I think whatever the day throws at you, a fisherman's friend is a good thing to have around. I was reading a study about breathing. Now, we all have to breathe, obviously. That wasn't the study. The study was saying that if we spend a couple of sessions a day really breathing deeply, so big, kind of big lung-filling breaths, it works wonders for well-being and that general sense of kind of vim and vigour. And if you pop a fisherman's friend in at the same time with all that menthol and eucalyptus that's buzzing around, that really does kind of pep you up for the day ahead.
Indeed. Well, I frequently sort of talk to our students at Lincoln about how the importance of breathing is vital to their addiction and delivery and so on and so forth. So it's good to see that have been confirmed by your good self, Robert. So what about yourself at Christmas? Will you be sort of partying on down, et cetera? Or will it be a case of, I mean, are you one of those 35-year-old plus grumps who would say, bar humbug?
I'm already planning the light display, so there's a little bit of merriment to come. But actually, looking at the survey, what quite a lot of us will be doing, I think, is retreating to the sofa with a hot drink, or maybe something a little more potent, perhaps a hot toddy of some kind, and kind of almost hibernating the winter out that way, I think.
It has been suggested, Robert, that many times we should have actually learned from our mammalian cousins who sometimes go into hibernation, or even the humble tortoise, perhaps. But that's another line entirely. Where can people go to find out further details, Robert, about the Fisherman's Friend survey?
To the website, which is www.fishermansfriend.com.
And, I mean, presumably you say, well, this is the quality of the merchandise, but what makes Fisherman's Friend such a popular perennial, a hardy perennial in terms of, I mean, you know, many folk would say, oh, it's going to be replaced and succeeded, but it's still hanging on in there and doing exceptionally well.
Oh, not only hanging on, yes, going from strength to strength. We make 5 billion lozenges a year now, and 95% of those go overseas, actually, so only 5% stay in the UK, but it's a big kind of international success story. And I think part of the success, I think the success comes into two areas, really. Part of it is sticking to the original formula. So those original extra strong Fisherman's Friends, which have lots more menthol and eucalyptus than pretty much anything else around, are, you know, kind of distinctive, and they have their devoted fan base. But there are 10 flavours now. You know, there's blackcurrant and lemon and cherry, and they've all got a bit of pep to them. If you can't face the full-blown thing, original, then there's an alternative out there for you as well.
Well, that was, of course, one of the questions I was going to put to you, because as you've diversified with respect to the flavour within Fisherman's Friend, etc., is there a personal favourite that you have?
I'm a stickler for tradition, so I do like the original, but I also like the mint. The mint lozenge is the best kind of extra strong mint I've tasted, so I'm really a fan of that.
Well, clearly the message that's coming across here is that whatever worries you might have re the winter months and so on, a packet of Fisherman's Friend in many flavours will hopefully sort of guide you through those days quite safely and securely. Robert, we've got two final questions to pop to you, good self. They're sort of fairly standard. We like to refer to them as our consumer satisfaction questions, really. Have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the programme today?
Absolutely, yes. That's been really, really interesting.
Well, then the next critical question is, can we look forward to you coming back in 2021 with more Fisherman's Friend news?
I very much hope so. And perhaps everything will be a little bit brighter and a little bit more positive next year. You never know.
You may not be aware of the names Anne Bonny and Mary Read. Well, hopefully that's going to be put to rights at the end of this next piece of information and entertainment, because we are delighted to welcome two fabulous individuals to actually explain about the background to Anne Bonny and Mary Read. Of course, historian professor extraordinaire Kate Williams. How are you, Kate?
Great to be here.
Fantastic. And indeed the author of Hellcats, the award-winning Karina Rodney. How are you, Karina?
I'm good. Thank you for inviting me.
Excellent. Kate, share with us why these two individuals, Anne Bonny and Mary Read, are not only going to be the subject of a new Audible podcast in terms of Hellcats, written by Karina, of course, but also are going to be basically part of this new statue that's being unveiled by British artist Amanda Cotton.
It's incredible, isn't it, Alex? They've been ignored for so many years, and here they are having their moment. They get a fantastic drama written by Karina, and they get this wonderful statue. So the statue has been unveiled today at Execution Docks in London, where pirates were actually executed, and it's going to be moved in the spring to Burl Island in Devon, this fantastic tidal island. So they'll always be by the sea down in Devon in pirate country, and they are such an incredible pair. They are trailblazing, they are exciting, they are the real life Pirates of the Caribbean. We think that piracy is all about men. Piracy is all about men, and you know, little boys get pirate parties, but these were the real deal. Anne and Mary were at the time two of the most famed and feared pirates in all of the Caribbean. And Anne was born in Ireland and Mary was born in England. And both of them together came together, had this amazing relationship. They were lovers, they were friends, they were fellow pirates. And they really stormed down the barriers of what people expected of women, of gender, and really of society.
So it opened up a whole range of things. I mean, Karina, from your own point of view, presumably this was almost a no-brainer, although I must admit, when I saw Hellcats, I thought, are you writing about the Marvel comic character of the same name? Perhaps not.
Well, they were referred to as Captain Jack Ratman's Brace of Hellcats on the Wanted poster, and I thought it was such a brilliant title for them. So I came across these characters years ago by accident, and I was so fascinated with them. And I couldn't understand why I hadn't heard their story or seen it. I mean, Anne's appeared as a side story in some pirate dramas, but she deserves, as does Mary, to be centre stage. I mean, this is a fascinating true story. It shows women behaving and living in the way that we don't always associate with the past, but did exist. They were in a relationship. They were pirates. They had boyfriends, they had ex-husbands, they were fearless, they commanded the ship. I think it's time that we join them in their adventures.
Clearly. Now, Kate, wearing your hat as Professor of Public Engagement with History at the University of Reading, is this something which, in a sense, it's like manna from heaven? Fantastic, we can really get people engaged with this.
Well, it really is. And it's so exciting because, yes, I love to see how history is in the public sphere. And I've actually taught these pirates. I actually did a pirate project on them last year with my second years. And they all love them. And they said, you know, why have we not got more about these pirates? And it really is such an exciting moment that they get both a statue and a drama. And what's so exciting for me is that they were written about, and we see them, of course, in the records of the law, because the law are always trying to chase them down. There's a price on their heads, and they are eventually captured and put on trial. But we don't hear their voices, their diaries, their letters. They were all lost, whatever they wrote. They never wrote their best-selling pirate biography. But what we have in this wonderful drama with Karina's so brilliantly done is that we hear their voices. So we hear them outside of these networks of male writers have always written about them. And you know, they write about them in a sensational way. But there's also a lot of fear there. And I think this is actually why they've been forgotten to a large degree from history. Because in the later 18th century, the 19th century, the Victorian period, people actually got a bit fearful that if women read about these female pirates, they might think, well, actually, I'd like to do that sort of thing as well. So you actually, I think, see them being squashed by history, because a lot of men don't want women to get any ideas about being pirates or about loving each other.
Well, it could open up a whole range of sort of aspects from that point of view. And we only have to point about the last century in terms of the challenges in both America and Britain for just actually getting the vote from that point of view. So heaven only knows what pirate revelations could have actually had. astonishing. Presumably Anne Bonny, no relationship to William Bonny, the Billy the Kid character. Just wanted to clarify that. I suspect not.
No relation. That was her husband. It was her husband's name, James Bonny, and he was actually a terrible husband. So I think she probably would have liked to escape his name. But this was a time when a woman didn't even own her own shoes or hairbands. So a nice husband, when he wrote his will, would leave his wife her shoes because otherwise she could be dispossessed of them. So women had no rights, nothing. And yet here we are with two female pirates who escape this dreadful ex-husband, go off, Anne goes off with Calico Jack, then she's in love with Mary, and they live free, and they live, and they're actually accepted by the other pirates.
As quick to draw their cutlasses as they were to fall in love, Anne and Mary sail the Caribbean, leaving a trail of looted treasure, outfoxed law enforcement and treacherous ex-lovers. Extraordinary. Karina, this particular podcast, of course, a new Audible original podcast called Hellcats and so on. Is this likely to be the first of a series? I mean, are you looking to a whole range of things for Hellcats? And clearly we need film and television rights as well.
Clearly. I would love to see it on Amazon Prime. I feel that this isn't the end of the story for them. I mean, they disappeared from the records after they were in court and they were sentenced to hang. They both pleaded their bellies to avoid the hangman and then disappeared from the records. Mary was presumed to have died in prison, but her death isn't recorded and Anne just disappeared from the records. So I wonder, you know, if there is another story to tell.
I'm sure there will be, and you're probably the right person to actually develop it as well. KarinaRodney.co.uk for further information about your good self. But turning to Kate, where would you recommend people to actually go to find out more about this sculpture, which, of course, even in these pandemic-oriented times, is being previewed at present before hopefully in 2021, when maybe some form of normality is actually restored. It'll be basically installed at Burr Island, the South Devon tidal retreat frequented by pirates for centuries.
It will, and yes, there's lots of information on the internet about the statue unveiling today, this Inexorable by Amanda Cotton. I'm busy tweeting pictures, and the podcast itself is on Audible tomorrow, so all 14 episodes of it. And just as Karina was saying, we hope this is the beginning of Anne and Mary's celebration, that when people think of pirates and children think of pirates, when it's Pirate Day, lots of schools have Pirate Days, don't they? When it's Pirate Day at school, people think, maybe I'll dress as Anne and Mary, as opposed to Blackbeard, or as opposed to Captain Jack in Pirates of the Caribbean. So I think there is, as Karina was saying, there's so much more to say and so much more to see of them. And it's just thrilling that they will be on Burr Island, one of Agatha Christie's favourite place. So these two great female pirates and Agatha Christie, the spirit, the queen of crime, will be together.
Karina Rodney, award-winning scriptwriter and indeed British historian, author and television presenter, and as we said, professor of public engagement even, Kate Williams. Many thanks indeed. Keep on keeping on.
Thank you.